Welcome to Policy and Politics with Dave Crooks. A big U.S. Senate seat is up on the ballot in Indiana this year, and one of the candidates running is in the studio today. Mark Carmichael is one of the two Democratic candidates for U.S. Senate to replace Mike Braun, and he is in the studio today at DLC Media. Mark, welcome to Policy and Politics.
Thanks, Dave. Glad to be here.
Well, glad to have you, and you're a funny-looking VW I see outside the studio. give us a quick story about the VW van that's all looking like kind of like a hippie van. Looks kind of cool.
Well, I bought the van in Brown County about 6 or 7 years ago, and it was white over gray and in good shape, and at least good shape on the exterior. Needed a lot of work from inside. But anyway, I wanted to make it like a hippie van.
It's definitely a hippie van. Looks
and
cool.
And I wanted it to go to concerts and take people out to eat and make people smile when I was on the highway. And so I took it out to a place on the east side of Indianapolis called Killer Wraps. And I said, I want to wrap this van in the traditional flowers and peace signs. But I also want to put album covers in the design.
Yeah, okay.
So I went online and I downloaded about 52 different album covers and sent it to the designer at Killer Wraps. And he worked the album covers into the design. And so I have so much fun in this vehicle.
I bet.
People wave, they honk, they give me the peace sign, thumbs up. It makes people smile. So
that's your traveling billboard for this election cycle.
Well, when
looks
I
like.
Decided to run for the Senate, I decided to put signs inside it, out, showing out the windows. And then got some magnetic signs to put on the doors. And so now it's a rolling billboard. And not only does it make people smile, but they take its picture and they upload it. And so I get free advertising out of the deal.
Okay, so if you see a VW hippie van running around Indiana between now and November, it's likely your next U.S. senator, at least he hopes to be.
Well, you know, Mitch Daniels had the RV.
That's right.
And I've got the hippie van.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. And give people a quick background of what made you decide to run and what makes you qualified to be Indiana's next U.S. Senator.
Well, as you know, I served in the Indiana House from the Muncie area. I was first elected in 1986, and my first opponent for my Indiana House seat just happened to be the Republican Speaker of the Indiana House, a guy by the name of J. Roberts Daley.
Absolutely.
And he had drawn this district when they drew the maps, gave himself about a 60% Republican district, all in Delaware County, very compact. And so when I looked at that, and I looked at my family and our background in Delaware County, I thought, you know, that'd be a pretty good district for me to run in. And I think maybe I can take this guy. Well, nobody else thought so. You know, my family thought I was crazy. The Democrat Party thought I was crazy. But I was determined to give it a try. And I started walking door to door that year in July with a little brochure, a little cheap brochure. And I walked all of July and August. Walking in September, I got a call from the Indiana State Teachers Association that they had decided to target my race because the speaker, they couldn't do any worse than they were doing under Speaker Bob Daley. And so they decided to take a chance on me and see if maybe they could beat him. So that gave me more resources and more volunteers. And so by the time we got to Labor Day, between family and friends and teachers, we were in full gear. And so we walked and put up yard signs and handed out materials all the way up to Election Day. And on Election Day, we beat Bob Daley by 18 points.
And so you beat the speaker, you're saying?
I beat the speaker 59-41.
And again, I know that's been a long time ago, but how many years did you have that seat?
I was in that seat for 5 years. I defended that district two more times. But at the end of the fifth session, which was a long session and two special sessions, we didn't get out of there until mid-June. And I had a young family and I had a job. And I just thought, you know, this is too much. You know, I need to go back.
This whole time part-time job wasn't really a part-time job.
As you know,
job.
It's a full-time part-time job. And Evan Bay was the governor, and the Republicans in the Senate were bound and determined to make his life miserable. And that's why we ended up with a regular session and two special sessions, was because we couldn't hammer out a budget. And so I thought, you know, this isn't going to end. Evan Bay just got elected, you know, in my case, 3 years prior. And these Republicans are not going to cooperate with him. And so my life is just going to be more and more miserable. So I decided to step down early, and we put a Democrat in there that I'd hoped could hold the seat. But in the next election, then she lost by 150 votes.
Oh, my.
So anyway.
Well, let's move on to this century, because that's been a long time ago. But obviously, you've had some political experience, and then you also did some lobbying, too, of course. That's when I
did.
You.
And I also ran for Congress in 1996 when Frank O'Bannon was running for governor for the first time. The Democrats didn't have anyone to run in the 3rd congressional district in East Central Indiana. And so I agreed to run that race so that we didn't have an opening there. And so I ran against David McIntosh, who was the incumbent. And I lost, as everyone expected I would, but I learned a lot. I went to Washington, D.C. and did the, you know, how that goes.
Sure.
You do the circuit to try and raise money from Democrat-leaning groups. And so I did lose the race, but Frank did win some counties in East Central Indiana that they weren't expecting to win.
Yeah, I got elected that year. That's my first session, 1996.
Yeah. So anyway, I was proud to be on the ballot that year with both Frank O'Bannon and Lee Hamilton. My congressional district came down and butted up against Lee Hamilton's in Bartholomew County. And so I remember being at a Bartholomew County dinner one night, a Democrat dinner at the same table with Lee Hamilton. And I thought, how cool is this? You know, I'm running for the same seat, type of seat, that Lee Hamilton holds.
Who was a model congressman.
Oh,
obviously.
It was wonderful.
Yeah. So now you're running all over Indiana. And let's be honest about this. You're younger than the president, but you're not a young guy. How old are you?
74.
Why would a 74-year-old man want to be a U.S. senator late in life, I guess? What really got you motivated?
The Supreme Court striking Roe v. Wade.
Okay.
The Dobbs decision.
That was the turning point for
you.
That
was the turning point. I've got 4 granddaughters, and all of a sudden, they have fewer rights than their mothers and their grandmothers, 50 years of rights down the drain. And I thought, you know, I can't sit on the sidelines. I'm retired. I've got the time. You know, this is a full-time job to run for the United States Senate. And so I thought, you know, the Democrats need somebody with some experience, somebody that's got the time. And we need to win this race now, because Congressman Jim Banks is the Republican nominee. He's cleared the field. So that he's it. And I did not want him to be my United States Senator. And you know as well as I do, in Indiana, if he wins and becomes a Republican incumbent, we'll never get rid of him. So we've got one chance, and this election is it. And so I contacted the state Democrat Party, and I said, look, and I wasn't really looking to run. I was just asking for my own edification. Who've we got to run against Jim Banks? I said, this is a very winnable race. You know, it's an open seat. After the Dobbs decision, women are going to be coming out in droves to vote. Young people are going to be coming out in droves because of climate change. People that are concerned about gun violence are fired up. People that are concerned about LGBTQ issues are fired up. I said, there's a lot of groups that are going to be fired up this year, and we need to take our best shot to beat this guy now. And so I said, who we got? And they said, "How about you?"
and I laughed. That was the wrong phone call to make, Mark.
Well, it was the wrong phone call to make. I said, "What do you mean, how about me?" I said, "You know, I'm retired. I'm having a nice time. I bought an old wooden Chris Craft speedboat that I was refurbishing, and I was trying to get it back in the water this past 23 season. And I was working hard. It was like, March or April. And I was really I was really working hard to get this boat back in the water. But I started thinking about it. And I thought, you know, maybe I am the guy. Maybe I'm just what people are looking for. You know, maybe an older person who has some experience, who's not a bomb thrower. You know, we've got too many bomb throwers right now. People that are so wrapped up in politics that they forget to be an American.
That's right. I agree with you. And that's, you know, it's okay to be critical, but we've left that, I don't know, there's no normalcy right now that you and I are used to. I mean, we know how it worked at the General Assembly. You sometimes have some fiery debates on the floor, but it never really got personal. I mean, session would be over and guys like you and me and others from across the aisle would be across the street at the press club having a drink afterwards and getting to know them and their families and their communities.
When I was first elected, I went in the minority and learned how to work with Republicans to get things done. And then we were in a 50-50 tie again.
First of two,
but I was in the first 50-50 tie. And again, you're working with Democrats and Republicans to get things done for the state of Indiana, give and take. And then I got appointed to the Ways and Means Committee. So once again, I'm working with Republicans to get things done. I had Ball State University in my district. I had to produce for Ball State, and I had to work with the Democrats and Republicans to make my case. Then we were in the majority, which you would think would make it easier, but it really doesn't. I mean, you're still dealing with budgetary issues, and when you're trying to represent a university, you got IU and Purdue and Indiana State and Ball State, and everybody's trying to get their piece of the pie. So it was still difficult to get my job done for Ball State. And even if you're in the majority as a Democrat in the House, you still have to take your issues to the Senate,
sure,
which has been controlled by the Republican Party since, 1974?
Long time.
So anyway, my point is, I can work with both sides. I can work with Republicans. I'd love to go to Washington and work with Todd Young to get things done for Indiana and for the United States.
All right, let's stop right there. You mentioned the senior senator's name, Todd Young, and it's been in the press the past week. Reporters put a microphone in his mouth, and they said, "Hey, are you going to support Donald Trump now that it's clear he's going to be your likely nominee," which he clinched on Tuesday night this week. What's your observation of all of a sudden Todd Young is saying, "Hey, this is too much. I can't support Donald Trump in 2024. What's that tell you?
It tells me that Todd Young wants to be an American first and a Republican second. And I admire him for having the courage.
Me too. Me too. Because that's not easy to do in the Trump Republican Party right now.
No. I mean, the Republican Party is dead. It is now the party of Trump. And if you don't pledge allegiance to Donald Trump,
or kiss his ring or his behind,
you can't get through a primary.
Yeah. And by the way, I've had people tell me, Jim Banks is not quite as bad as we think, but yet he's pandering to Donald Trump as much as anyone in the state of Indiana to advance his Senate race.
No, he's a Trumper, and he's an election denier and a climate denier.
And he voted that way.
And he's formed the anti-woke caucus in the U.S. House.
What's that?
It's a group of people who want to deny the fact that there has been discrimination in the United States that needs to be addressed, and it's still there. But they say, no, you know, there's nothing like that. And we've gone overboard, they say, in an effort to correct something that doesn't need to be corrected. So he forms this anti-woke caucus, which to me is just a mean-spirited attempt to make America white again. You know, I mean, that's the whole argument.
Or not gay friendly or whatever.
But, you know, even the immigration argument is let's get rid of these people that are of a different color than us.
Well, but let's talk about immigration for a second, because polling shows that seems to be the top issue right now. And I can see that in Indiana, where a lot of Hoosiers are upset about the border. And many like the Trump policy because he clamped down. But yet some of those policies also separated families, which seemed awful cruel. So the new president, when Biden got elected, he changed some of those executive orders. But yet there was a kind of a mass rush to the border, of course, as COVID settled down. And now we've obviously got a problem that's got to be dealt with. So obviously, the gentleman out of Oklahoma, Jim, what's his name? Last name from the senator from one of the conservatives that helped work on this. And I can't believe I can't think of his name because I've said it 10 times recently. But you've got the senator from Oklahoma, and he's come up with some pretty good language, along with Kristen Sinema, who now has announced she's not even going to stay in the Senate after becoming an independent. And they really got a lot of concessions that even a lot of Democrats admitted, wow, we would have never gone this far in the past, but we admit we've got to concede on this and try to find a way to fix the border. And then tell us what happened.
Well, Trump shut it down in the House because he didn't want a solution. He wanted a scare tactic, you know, to run on. And that's basically what they do, is that they don't want a solution to the border issue.
Kind of like the abortion issue until the dog actually caught the car. Yeah.
But no, now, you know, we need to tighten down our border. You know, there's no question about it, but it's just a difference of opinion how you do that. President Biden has been asking for more money for a long time to hire, you know, more security officers and more judges to handle the claims cases. And so we need to tighten our border, but we also need immigration. Because we can't grow our economy without immigration.
Yeah, I've not seen too many, I guess I would call homegrown raised residents out picking the produce that we all need to eat daily.
No, look around. Look who's doing all the hard work that we can't get our kids to do.
Yeah, when I was growing up, I put up hay and picked watermelons and things like that.
I know, but look who's doing the hard work.
Yeah.
You know, look in the service industry. Who's making the beds in the hotels? You know, who's grooming the grass? I'm sorry, but we need
immigrants.
We need immigration to grow our economy because our birth rate is falling. And we now have young people that don't think they want to bring a child into this world because of climate change, because of fighting around the world, because of hatred. And so our birth rate is falling. And you can't close your borders and grow your economy at the same time. On the other hand, you can't have open borders. So we have a big problem that can be solved if everybody will sit down and put the politics aside and quit running on the fear tactic of, you know, rapists and, you know, drug dealers and fentanyl flooding across our border because, you know, the Democrats didn't fix it. Well, we've been trying to fix the border issues since, what, 1986?
Yeah, it's gone on way too long. It's got to be dealt with. There's no question. Were you surprised, though, to turn your TV on recently and an ad comes up for the border and all of a sudden it's our friend, the Lieutenant Governor Crouch, attacking Biden, attacking the fentanyl problem, and I'm scratching my head saying, oh, Governor Crouch, what are you thinking? What's this got to do with the state of Indiana?
It's a wonderful fear tactic. I mean, that's why Trump shut it down, shut the agreement down in the U.S. House. It's too good of a fear tactic for the Republicans to give it up in an election year. Now, after the election, we may be able to deal with it. But it's going to take people like me and Todd Young being Americans first and politicians second, and sitting down with other like-minded people and hammering out an agreement that's fair and enforceable. But, you know, we got to set it aside as a political fear tactic.
All right, so we got to do a little rapid pace now as we're getting down to our final moments. But obviously on the border, the Senator Lankford proposal, I forgot his name earlier and now it finally came to me.
Good.
But you would support basically the proposal that was in the House and Senate.
It was pretty draconian. The Democrats were willing to sign off on it, in return for funding for Ukraine.
Which, where do you stand?
I mean, it was a gun to their heads.
True.
Now, let me just finish. The Dreamers were left out of this agreement.
True.
I can't go for that. The Dreamers deserve to be here as United States citizens.
And for those that don't pay attention, remind people what Dreamers are.
Well, the Dreamers are the children that were born here of parents who may not have been citizens when they were born.
Or documented.
Through no fault of the kids, these kids deserve to stay here because they're United States citizens.
And some are like 15, 20,
sure.
30 years old.
And they're too talented to ship them off. And think about the logistics of trying to put, what, 3-4 million people on buses and send them back to Mexico at gunpoint. I mean, this
after they've been here for decades.
My God.
So, yeah. So that's
boggles the mind.
Yeah, I respect what you're saying there. The Dreamers should have a path. And I can't believe that we're still kicking this can down the road. But it seems like we are. But obviously, you're for some type of pragmatic immigration.
Sure.
Border security.
Of course.
All right. So we've got to fix it. All right. $34 trillion debt. Obviously, we had to ramp up things when COVID hit, and we took some chances that maybe some might say we went too far with on spending dollars, but at least we're pretty much leading the world on the recovery, making a lot of progress. Inflation obviously is still too high, but what do we do to wrap our arms around a $34 trillion debt? That's not sustainable, is it, Mark?
It's not sustainable, but it's not the end of the world. I mean, we can begin to work on it slowly but surely and work it down and grow our way out of it. But it's, you know, it's a big debt, but we're a big country and, we can manage it. We just need to start working on it.
So
the problem is that both parties, when they're in control, when the Republicans are in control, add to the debt. I think the debt went up $7 trillion during the Trump years.
More like eight. But,
well, know. But nobody can say no. I mean, that's the problem, is that, it's easy to say no when you're in the minority, but when you're in the majority and things have to be done and people have needs that need to be met, everybody says yes. You know, that's just human nature.
I think sometimes you and I regret the days of when Reagan gave away a little cash and then they threw some cheese into the mix at that time to try to help people out. And then they saw how people reacted to that little distribution. And it seems like lawmakers are always trying to find a clever way to give some money back, but yet we don't always have a plan to pay for
it. Well, the problem is that the only thing the Republicans can agree on is another tax cut for the rich. And every time we do that, we take money out of the system that could be used for programs that need to be funded or to pay down the debt. We have to quit giving tax cuts to the rich. But that's the only thing Republicans can agree on.
Got about a minute left. Obviously, Ukraine, Israel, they still need our support. And those things are still tied up in Congress right now.
Right. And it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, there's no excuse for not coming to the aid of Ukraine quickly. I mean, it's a democracy. It's fighting for its life.
And you and I are old enough to know the World War II history. And why in the world would we not stand up for a NATO ally? I mean, we don't want 1939 to repeat itself.
No, and NATO is such a good bargain for the United States. With all those NATO members over there keeping their eyes and ears on Russia and China, and we don't have to be there in person, you know, we can work through our allies. To pull out of NATO would be the stupidest thing we could ever do. And Donald Trump is probably the stupidest man I've ever seen. So that's his, that's what he wants to do.
Take us out of NATO. And why? And why can't he never, like, call Putin out on anything?
Well,
that
here's a guy
me.
Says people aren't paying their fair share. Well, here's a guy that's declared bankruptcy 6 times and yanked the rug out from underneath the people, you know, who supplied services to him during that period of time. He doesn't pay his bills.
Ask his
attorneys.
I'll give you one more minute to plug your website or what you'd like supporters or potential voters to do when it comes to Mark Carmichael for U.S. Senate.
Well, I do have a website, and it's markforindiana.com.
And Mark is spelled?
Mark is with a C.
Okay.
So markforindiana.com with a C, and you can read all about the issues that I have. I'm interested in working on, as I said, codifying Roe versus Wade, so my granddaughters have the same rights their moms and grandmothers had. I want to work on gun violence. I want to work on climate change. I want to work on trying to cut down on the hate in this country, you know. But what I really want to do is go be an American in the United States Senate. Sure, I'm a Democrat, but I'm an American first. And I think Todd Young is an American first. Wouldn't it be great to have two senators from Indiana, calm, cool, collected senators, not bomb throwers.
Pragmatic.
Pragmatic. Let's go get some stuff done. Let's be Americans. And then let's be proud Hoosiers. And let's have Hoosiers be proud of us.
Mark Carmichael, he is a candidate on the Democratic ticket for U.S. Senate. And in fairness, your opponent, I know you're friendly with her, but give us her name.
Her name is Dr. Valerie McCray. She's a psychologist from Indianapolis, and she's a good person.
And you guys are friends? And
We're friends, but I firmly believe that I'm our best chance to beat Jim Banks in the only chance we get. We only get this one chance.
Mark Carmichael, thanks for making the trip to the Wabash Valley today, and I'm sure I'll see lots of you in the next several months as the campaign continues. Best of luck, and be careful in that hippie van as you're driving the Hoosier highways.
I'm going to be in the parade in Terre Haute on Saturday.
Oh, very good. Well, we'll see you later this morning. Policy and Politics with Dave Crooks is a production of the DLC Media News Department. Downloads of this program and past shows are available at any of our DLC Media radio station websites. Follow me on X or Facebook to learn who is appearing next week, as well as the times and list of radio stations where you can hear the show first. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.